Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, my name is Roland Clark, and I'm here today on the New Books Network talking to Ramona Dima about her new book, Queer Culture in Romania, 1920 to 2018. Ramona is an associate professor in gender studies at the University of Sangvana, and her research focuses on queer literature, sexuality and migration, LGBTQ plus activism, and anti-gender politics in Europe. Welcome to the program, Ramona.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Ramona, to help us understand why this is such an important book, I was wondering if to start with you could tell us a bit about what life is like for LGBTQ plus individuals in Romania today in terms of their legal rights and social acceptance. Is it a particularly embracing place to live?
Well, short answer would be not really, no. But let's split it into the two dimensions you mentioned. So we have legal right dimension and then social acceptance. So I would start by saying that in terms of legal rights, and there's a bit of history here, it was only in 2001 that homosexuality was decriminalized in Romania. So we have quite a long history comparing to other spaces, other countries around in Southeastern Europe, when it comes to decriminalizing homosexuality. And then since then, we had quite a lot of legislative trials, the latest one being this Coalition for Family, which is basically formed by a lot, maybe 80 or something organizations, mostly right-wing and conservative organizations on very many different levels, from student organizations to, of course, church organization and so on. And they wanted to change the criminal code to include this, and specifically state that family should only, and the marriage should only be between a man and a woman. And then, of course, you have legal cases that's during the last...
What year was this referendum?
Oh, they had I think it was 4 years ago already. I'm not very sure.
Very recent.
Quite recent, yes. And then everything disappeared. So you can't really find too many information on the web pages they built up because the referendum failed. It was lack of quorum. Okay, and then you have this other dimension of couples, queer couples in Romania who actually sued the state. And you have this recent case of Buhucianu and others versus the state. And they just recently got this decision from the European Court of Human Rights, which decided that Romania should implement a legal framework for civil partnerships, which would also, of course, include same-sex partnerships. So there's a lot of things going on the legal level. And if you think of the social level, social acceptance, as you call it, it's also mixed. I would say it's also quite mixed. So you have surveys on the one hand. Let's say there's this survey recently made by Accept, which is this large LGBT NGO in Romania. And according to their survey, 68% of participants would be in favor of all the families to have this legal framework, so including queer couples. And then you have other surveys, very recent surveys as well, made by other companies, which say 69% would vote to have the constitution changed, as the Coalition for Family wanted, to restrict marriage before a man and a woman. So it's very interesting. If you try to find out stuff from surveys, it really depends which ones do you pick and stuff like that, I would say. And then, of course, the Romanian media contributes quite a lot, I would say, the social acceptance level. And I've seen during the recent years slight change in discourse. So it's less pejorative usually, and they start speaking a bit more about queer or LGBT rights, which was quite unusual, I would say, maybe 10 years ago. And so that's a plus. Of course, you'd still have conservative and right-wing media trying to counter this tendency in the Romanian media sphere, but that's all right. And then again, of course, you still have a lot of pretty like attacks of trans women who are beaten and who are abused, and that's still going on. You have, for example, recently the prime minister came out to say that Romania is not ready for civil partnership, of course, as a response to this European Court of Justice decision. And then, of course, you have very many large layers of stuff. So it's not an easy answer. Of course, compared to 20 years ago, I guess people are talking way more about these issues than,
So things are changing, but...
Kind of, yes.
And there's still a lot of hostility.
Yes, a lot. Yeah, I would say a lot.
You describe this book as an archive of queer cultural products in Romania. Why do you see it as an archive, despite all of the detailed analysis that is in the book of literature, film, and art?
Yeah, that's it's actually very connected of how this book started. So it started with me trying and managing to get into a PhD program at the University of Bucharest. And I actually had no really too much knowledge about so many cultural products when I started. I knew some of them, or I knew of some of them, and then I started to dig in a bit closer to I started to actually build a library of books made by Romanian authors mostly, and where I could find something queer, anything queer. So I started to build up this. I have like 400 plus titles right now. Translations, of course, as well, but mainly queer authors. So I was just very interested to find out more and more literature, more and more movies. And at that time, the cultural scene in Romania was just beginning to approach this theme of LGBTs and sexualities. So it was not so much material to start with. So this sense, I would say it's an archive because it started with the idea of let's find everything we can, performance art, contemporary art, anything. Let's find them. Let's at least mention them, if not going deep. As you right, guess you saw that I chose just some products to get a bit deeper into because I couldn't actually analyze the whole thing in the end. But at least it was very important for me to mention them. The reason why is that this book was also published in Romanian previously, last year, so a year before this English edition. And I really wanted to publish it in Romanian for the audience there, or for queer persons who might want to, find out more, read more about this. And maybe they don't know where to start, or maybe they haven't heard of all this, literature, movies and stuff. So in this sense, I find it, and it's also the first of its kind in Romania. So I felt the need to actually build it around this idea of an archive first before I dwelt into the analysis.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think it's really important because so much of this stuff goes under the radar or becomes invisible very quickly. You start by talking about six novels and memoirs from the 1930s that include characters in same-sex relationships. I'd like to stop briefly on Ionel Teodorano's 1931 novel, Fata din Zlataust, if that's okay. You point out that Teodoriano is very nuanced in his presentation of gender and sexuality in the 1930s, and he's able to show how fluid masculinity and femininity was in the period. How does he do that?
Well, he does that, I wouldn't say subtly, but okay. So he does it in different moments of the book. So I had to reread it prior to this. So thank you very much. It's one of my favorite examples, actually, this book. He just refers to, you know, let's say Dorian Gray or other kind of epitomes of queerness in world literature. Sometimes he just drops lines like, and this is a quote, Jesus' charm was feminine. So he plays a bit with this. Well, of course, in other parts he has more straightforward depictions. For example, this is another quote. He says, the boy girls know how to drive, how to fly a plane. Why wouldn't they make their debut in the sport of kidnapping, which until yesterday was only reserved to men? So he has all this little tiny bits spread across the whole novel. And at the same time, you have the two characters, the two women, right? Stool mates at a women-only school. And then you have this character who writes these letters to this other person. And you only find out in the end that all these passionate letters, love letters, were actually wrote by another girl to this girl. So that's quite smart. And it's also the language of it all, because Romania is very gendered language. So you have gender everywhere in the sense. It's either masculine, neutral, feminine. So you even in the formulations of the letters, you find, for example, this person, this Ralu, she's writing to Delia, and Ralu says, I'll be your ghost, which is feminine in Romania, and I'll be your undead, which is masculine in Romanian. And it's all this, and it's very interesting in how the language is used. And of course, the whole story then unravels and everybody finds out that it was this girl writing to this other girl, and that's a very tragic end. But if for Romanian speakers, it's actually quite nice to discover the book by themselves. But yeah, I would say
and because it's a gendered language, it's very impressive the author's able to hide that until the end.
I mean, it's gendered in a way that you can say person, and then which is feminine, and then you just continue with feminine because you just said the word person, right?
Mm.
Or you can say I'm the one who, and then it's still unclear if it's, you know, it's not that, it can be neutral as well. So of course, at any point in these letters, you don't really find masculine words that much, but you find a lot of neutrals, or, you know. Yeah, so yeah, it's also not really surprising that this happened. It was still during 1930s where literature was a bit more lax with discussing sexuality in a way. So yeah, it might seem puzzling for people, but it was a bit way worse during communism. So yeah.
That's interesting because you've got all this material from the 1930s, mm-hmm. and then hardly anything during state socialism.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, I would say we can go back to the legal argument. Homosexuality was not criminalized in the Romanian territories until 1937. And then during communist regime, the article incriminating, or the articles actually incriminating homosexuality were adjusted, and the punishments became more and more severe, I would say. Then again, on the other hand, you have censorship that was pretty much common in the during communism times, of course, and also in Romania. It was all about not avoiding to address issues that might come as bourgeois or coming from the West. And we all knew, of course, that the West is rotten. West was basic, mainly the US, but then again also Western Europe. And yet, very interesting for me was to find out, so I accessed and I built this archive of scanned newspapers from the early 1900s until present. And some, it was very hard to find references to homosexuality. And it was harder to find references on homosexuality and lesbianism because I was searching with these key terms during communism. It was more common before communism. And then, but then again, there were some, at least 40, 50 articles mentioning this, these terms that were produced during communism. And they all referred to either a movie which depicted a lesbian relationship, for example, and that was, of course, framed as, you know, this Western culture and look what's happening in this depraved, you know, West. Or things as such. So it was a paradox there. It, we had like homosexuality being a taboo, but at the same time, you would have, of course, sometimes newspapers steering towards this direction I just mentioned, or you just hear usual conversations between people, there were jokes or stuff. Then this is what I found out from my interviews with queer people who lived, and queer women who lived during communism. So, yeah, in a way, I think it was mostly because of censorship and the legal frame. And of course, there were a lot of censors who would look through everything that was supposed to be published, and they would take out not only references to sexuality, of course, for references to many other things that were not really desired during communism. So yeah, I would say this is horrible.
Yeah, anything interesting or fun gets censored out quite quickly. Yeah. One of the texts you do talk about from the communist period is Nikolai Balot's diary. And you point out it's actually quite problematic as a source if you want to find out about queer culture in 1950s Romania. What's problematic about it?
Well, I would say that the language was, of course, not the best. The language where when Balot refers to this kind of topic, but then again, I actually thinking back, I would say he just uses the language of the time, in a way. And in a way, it's actually interesting. Yes, it is problematic if you look at it like now. But if you go a bit deeper and you find out that he was actually friends with these people he mentions, Ion Negoitescu, for example, he was quite known as a homosexual at that time. And he was a member of this intellectual circles and he was actually there for kind of as an external observer.
So this is a straight man writing about his gay friends in his diary.
Yes, sporadically. So he has a very long diary, and sporadically there are episodes where he recollects when he went to this, you know, party with all these other people who thought he's the same as him or stuff like that. And then, yeah, of course, they were a bit reluctant, of course, to be around the person who's not queer and things as that. But in the end, I guess it's still a valuable source to have because there's so little, as we just mentioned, there's so little information about those times that was during communist times. I think it's an interesting piece in a way, but you still have to fish for these episodes in the whole journal. It's quite large, but it also mentions a lot of it's only male intellectuals. Just to be clear, it just mentions a lot of names that or the Romanian culture, queer culture now tries to, you know, rediscover and mention as forefathers or something of gay intellectualism, I might say. So it's an interesting material in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the language in some points that was a bit problematic, but if you just filter it through the discourse we're used to now, especially in the West. So, yeah.
Yeah, no sources. Every source is valuable. The question is how you read them.
Yeah.
And that doesn't just apply to historical sources. It's also much more recent stuff. Like, can you tell me how people responded to Adnan Kiop's 2013 novel, Soldati, and the film that was made about that?
Yeah, I think overall, both the book, especially the book and the movie, they were success. I mean, the book was in top five most sold books at this Gaudeamus Book Fest in 2013, and Gaudeamus Book Fest is the largest book fair we had in Bucharest. The novel also got some prizes, so it got critical recognition. Also, the movie was also selected for some European and, yeah, of course, other festivals outside Europe. And I think it was overall, the reactions were quite positive because, I guess, of the topic and because of the novelty of the subject. It was quite kind of the first novel in Iranian literature tackling both racism and queerness and using, in a way, Roma community in this new setup.
How does the novel talk about queer characters?
Oh, it's very easy. It's just the author of the novel, who is also, of course, the main character, he just has this relationship with this other Roma person in this character. And this is actually, the whole novel is about their relationship and their relationship with the persons around them and with all this back and forth of being out or not for the for the author's partner. And what's even more interesting is that in the movie, the author of the novel himself plays his role. And then they found another person to play the other, his partner's role, a Roma person. So I guess that was also quite special or unseen in this Romanian landscape, I would say. Now, of course, the reaction varied. And of course, you would have a racist, reactions. And homophobic reactions as well, but overall, I would say that was quite a success. So of course, it's very interesting to go deeper, and I do this in my book to actually discuss what it means to instrumentalize Roma experiences, to just instrumentalize queerness, to how these two intertwine in this particular case, but. Again, it was quite the first for the Romanian institution. So I imagine that this is why it was kind of rightly appreciated in the end. Yeah.
Probably the most well-known of the films that you talk about is Christian Mungiu's movie from 2012 about the murder of Irina Kornic at Takano Monastery in 2005. There's a lot of entangled themes in this film. But can you tell us a bit how the film presents lesbian relationships?
Yes, that's another one of my favorite movies, I might say. I know it's long, but it's so tense and heavy. So I guess the question, the answer would be, it is tense. This relationship is quite tense. You have... Again, language comes again. You have language there. You have direct references to lesbianism and to homosexuality. You have the two main characters. So one of them, Alina, she's coming back from Germany to visit and to convince Vojkita, her childhood friends, to come with her back to Germany and to leave the monastery where she was currently residing in. And there are a lot of moments of closeness between the two characters. There are a lot of long looks between them. So it's like the whole movie was framed to actually excavate the relationship between the two. Of course, we don't really know, it being based on a real story of this person, Alina, who actually was murdered by the nuns during exorcism in Romania. It's just the way the director chooses to highlight this maybe imagined, maybe not relationship. But then again, you have also the books on which the movie is based. And in the books, you also have some hints about their relationship, but then the movie takes it a bit further with all this scenery and all this moments. And it's also very connected to sin, which is quite very Romanian Orthodox or very Orthodox topic, right? The sin. And it is the sin, and it's also, you would have, they also specifically mention that there is a sin for two women to sleep with each other, things as such. So it's a lot, it's also straightforward declarations of or questions between the two characters. One of them asks Alina asks Vojkita, do you love me? And then Joanna Maria replies, yes, but, you know, not like God, not like I love God and things as such. So it's very, very quite straightforward relationship. Lesbian relationship, they don't kiss, you don't see them kissing or anything like in usual movies. But then again, it's very, very tense and very, very nicely constructed, I might say. And very, very sad, especially that it's quite heavy based, and it's based, unfortunately, on real facts. In the end, at least the death is real there.
And what's beautiful about both of these books and movies is the way that they explore intersectionality. So Soldati, it's, let's talk about Roma and race and class together with queerness, and this one, religion and violence and all these other topics as well, women's rights. You also talk a lot about art exhibitions, including one that I found really interesting called Desire is War, which was at the Bruckenthal Museum in Sibiu in 2011. What did the artists mean when they said desire is war in contemporary Romania?
So that exhibition introduced a more international approach in the early days of queer art and activism in Romania. And I guess they literally meant that queer desire was or could be seen as a declaration of war by conservative forces. And so I spoke a bit earlier about this Coalition for Family, but it was not there yet, but still there were attempts even those years. So it was also a declaration of war because queer people felt constantly attacked and they felt under assault, and which they were actually. So this was, I guess, reflected in the design of the exhibition, and the setup was similar to that of a bunker in which someone had fought a glitter war. So the windows of the exhibition space were walled with wooden planks, for instance. Different artworks were exhibited in a sea of exploded confetti and glitter. But it's also interesting to mention that the same year, so 2011, there was this another relevant group exhibition taking place in Bucharest, which is called Silent Skills, Discrimination Files. And I do not do a comparison of these two exhibitions in the book, per se, but that would be interesting to do, because Desire is War makes more radical statements with works by local and international queer authors, and these were quite abstract, while Silas Hills aims to put together different forms of discrimination. Like they try to kind of build up on this intersectionality idea. So they put together homophobia, they put together racism against Roma persons. And it was quite a relevant approach, especially for 2011 or the years 2000. And the artist selection still ranged from very relevant artists to also instrumentalizing these kind of topics. So it's quite interesting to see how these two were built and how the discourses changed over time with instrumentalization and everything.
And it shows how there's not just one way to talk about queerness in Romania.
That's, of course, it's quite, true. Yeah.
There's this old joke that all Romanians are gay because Romanians don't come from Adam and Eve. They come from Traian and Decebal. In this play, Mihaela Mikhailov and Paul Dunker or Paula Dunker, they took this idea to its logical conclusion in the play called After Traian and Decebal, or After Trajan and Decebalus, Fragments of Gay History in Romania. And they reinterpret Romanian history by telling the audience about same-sex relationships had by medieval Romanian rulers like Radu cel Frumos and Petru Cercel. And then they juxtapose that with these accounts of stories by queer individuals in contemporary Romania. How did people respond to this play?
So I guess before I respond to the question, I would say a bit more about the context of this play, because it's quite important to set it up in a context. So it was made by Mihaela Mihailov and Paula Dunker in summer of 2012. And they what they did was first make some rounds during some months of interviews with different persons from the LGBT community. And these persons would have had some experiences during communism. So then they based their characters on these persons' experiences. It was quite a practice in the Romanian performance scene at that time. I think it still is to of course, make interview-based plays, if you know what I mean. So they did that with this subject. And then they framed the whole play as a history lesson. So then in this history lesson, of course, you would find information about Radu Cercel, Petru Cercel and Radu cel Frumos and other rulers. Which we learn of during our history lessons in the school. And then they just took those information. And it's, again, we're going back to the way how queer culture producers in Romania tried to reference back to history and to reclaim different characters from, you know, Romanian history. To reshape them and to say, hey, these people were queer, they existed there and there and there, blah, blah. But then again, they also mixed it with more recent accounts from communism. So what they did was they had this setting of an actual classroom, and the audience was seated in actual school benches. So the public was never large. It was maybe around 40 people per performance. And they had a few performances in an art gallery in central Bucharest. It was called Salon of the Proiecte, and once at CNSPA, which is the Romanian School for Political Sciences. And actually, after the performance at CNSPA, several people from the audience who were just exiting from the play, they were attacked in the streets by some homophobes. This was happening, right, in 2011, 2012. And it became quite famous that these people were attacked during those times, and they were specifically attacked by groups of religious right in the end. And then they continued to update the play and they continued to perform for several years after in different other contexts. So they were invited to do it. I guess it was quite a large need for this play to be played. So I guess in a way it was a success as well. And I think it was extremely well received by its audience because it was indeed quite kind of the first play about the Romanian queer culture and history. But of course, it remains quite a niche as many other queer cultural products.
Which is why an archive like this is so important. When you talk about these cultural texts, you're basing that on a lot of interviews you've done with the writers and directors and artists that you're talking about. When you talk to them, did they think that Romania has a queer culture in the 21st century? Or is queer culture something they would like to see appear in Romania in the following decades?
Well, that's, fair to say, most of the people I spoke back then, so this was 2017, right? 5 years ago when I was conducting the interviews. It's very nice to maybe redo some of them and to see how things changed now in some people's opinions. But back then, most of them, when I was speaking about queer culture, most of them considered that late 2000s were quite the years for laying the foundations of such a queer culture in Romania. And they considered it was still in its early stages. So they saw, of course, the need to do these historical recoveries, to reinterpret different important moments, historical moments in Romania's queer people's lives. Some of the people did not think of these materials as constituting a queer culture yet. But then again, these interviews were 5 years ago. Since then, a lot more literature appeared. There are more performances right now. There is actually a new Roma theater company which tackles issues of queerness and racism at the same time. So then a lot of things changed since then. Of course, some of the people I interviewed 5 years ago were mentioning that there was this other scene created around these queer clubs, well, which have contributed to this construction of a queer social scene. Of course, they are not defining all the queer people, but then again, they were kind of pinpointed as essential gathering places. And they were, of course, mainly could be found mainly in like big cities like Bucharest or Cluj-Napoca or Timișoara. And of course, there are queer cultural producers who migrated in the recent years, and they started to produce more queer art in different, you know, setups in Europe and beyond. So yeah, I guess it's
Yeah, this is one of the frustrating things about how long it takes to get a book published, is that by the time it comes out, you've got to write a whole new book. Yeah. What did the people you talked to think was unique about producing queer culture in Eastern Europe as opposed to in the West?
Well, first of all, it was the historical context, which of course had to do a lot with what was common in different countries in the Eastern Bloc. And all the countries in the former Eastern Bloc had some degrees of Soviet influence, and they had some sort of legislation prohibiting, you know, or publishing, punishing same-sex relationships or activism. And I guess Romania's was probably the strictest in a way. So as I mentioned, it took quite a long time until 2001, until homosexuality was actually decriminalized. So I guess it was also a matter of we and most of the eastern part of Europe did not have a HIV fight, you know, in the 80s. And we did not really have demonstration for human rights in the 60s. And it's all these stages of LGBT activism, which went through in the West. We didn't really have them. So I guess this is one of the most important differences in a way. And this, of course, reflects a lot in the cultural production and in the themes and in the way culture is done in this particular area and with this particular topic. It was also, of course, this makes it as a unique context for producing queer culture. And many persons that I talked to also felt that the Orthodox and an Australian atmosphere in Romania, which is similar to, let's say, the one in Republic of Moldova or in Bulgaria, played quite an important role. And another dimension that they talk about in the interviews was the lack of financing in general for contemporary culture. So that's a lot. It's a topic in itself, because of course you can't really produce that much when you don't really have the means for to produce it. So of course a lot of these cultural projects, many of them, at least in the beginning, the early stages, were smaller projects, were more precarious, but also they were very much very engaged and very critical towards racism, towards homophobia and nationalism. And of course, speaking of funding, it's not just Eastern European culture, which is not really funded. Of course, you would find artists in precarious conditions elsewhere. And even if you look in the Nordic space, as I'm living now here, you would still find some artists which consider themselves and are actually in precarious positions. And you would still have a reduction in funding for culture as it happens now in Sweden, for example, overall. So it's very interesting also to think about who's funding and why is funding also. Of course, there's idea of capitalizing on this image of diversity. For example, recent example, let's say from Romania. So this year, Timișoara, which is this western city in the western part of Romania, got the title of European Capital of Culture. So they actually had to, had received funding to make a queer exhibition, to make some queer events. And this was, of course, back from the municipality. It's in a way, very interesting as far as funding those.
That's almost unprecedented.
Of course, you still have national funding and people apply with queer project to Romanian national funding, and sometimes they do get it, actually. So that was, that's not really unprecedented, but in this kind of way, it's very easy to see where the politics and where the directions it takes you with this funding. Sometimes it just happens that, have this thing, we have to seem diverse enough, so let's include this, because, we have a lot of funds for this, so it looks good. But maybe it's just me and I mean, but I guess it's a good example.
And we're European now, and this is what Europeans do.
And all the other persons, I guess.
Thinking about the process of doing all this research and looking at the cultural products you talked about in this book and the challenges and limitations that the authors and artists faced, did it leave you feeling optimistic about where the future's going?
Well, I mean, that's very... Right now, I would say, okay, so in terms of how things progress, in terms of culture, queer culture, when I would say I'm more and more optimistic, it's also on academic level, I'm starting to finally see a bit more engagement from the Romanian part in this academic realm of LGBT studies, queer studies. I'm seeing more and more, as I said, mentioned a couple of times, that I'm seeing more and more things produced by queer authors, and that's quite joyful for me and quite nice to see. But then again, I don't really know how to answer this because it's also quite politically tied, of course. And if you get a right wing or conservative government, I guess it's a bit difficult to be optimistic again. So it's a very hard question to answer. Right now, we see. I would say yes, I'm feeling optimistic, but then again, we'll see how politicians turn. You know, in Romania and elsewhere in the coming years. And already you have attacks on this, even in the Nordic countries, even in Norway, even in Sweden. Like, for example, here in Sweden, you would have the right-wing party, which is quite getting powerful now. And it's actually collaborating with the ruling coalition, and they actually have a say in different regards, migration issues, you know, cultural issues, and so on. And they just, you know, they have flyers. For example, they had this flyer for Malmo Pride last year, where they said, "Oh, this thing costs so much money, and we are opposing this." To have a pride here in Sweden, in this city, because it costs so much money. This is money. So it's very interesting. In this, if I think of these kind of examples, I'm not really optimistic at all, but we'll see what happens. So it's
hard to be optimistic about the future in 2023.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's about all we have time for today, but thank you so much for sharing all this story. And I really encourage people to pick up the book because there's so much in it and some really interesting stuff that even if you think you know about this scene, you'll find new material.
And thank you so much again for your invitation. And I really hope for people to pick up the book, as you said, or just contact me if they need help with anything. Yeah.